up questions. Front row, middle, Dave Middle, 24/7 Sports.
Hi, Ryan. Can you discuss the impact of Justin Fry, just what he's brought to the offense as a whole? The offensive line seems to be playing well. Running game seems to be clicking. Just what has Coach Fry brought to the table?
A lot of things. I think he has really done a good job of, first off, building camaraderie in that group. As you know, the offensive line has to have chemistry, and I think he's built good relationships there. I think he's built credibility just in his teaching and the way that he teaches. We're off to a good start there. We still got a long way to go. We still are building. We're growing. There's still a lot of things we need to get better at, a lot of things. But I think you can see that we're targeted. We're playing with an edge, you know, running off the football. And that has had a big impact on our offense and the way that we're trying to strike that balance. But I think his impact has been felt.
I know Mayan is in better shape this year, so that's probably one reason he's looking so good. But what's maybe another difference about Mayan this year?
You definitely can see it. Yeah. I mean, he had a really good preseason. I thought he had one of the better preseasons of anybody that was going into the season. But when you go back, you know, he has had some good games for us. I think he's been probably more consistent just day in and day out and taking care of his body because he does run really violently.
Fourth row middle, Pat Murphy,
24/7. During the offseason, we talked about Tanner a lot, but I think it was more what he could bring from Oklahoma State to help run the defense. When you guys looked at him on film, what did you see as a player on the field? Maybe we didn't talk about enough in the
We watched film of him, but we also took a lot of recommendations from Jim on that one because he obviously knew him very well. So, you know, the feedback that we got, and certainly we did watch film and saw that he did have some production. And having a veteran guy back there was going to be critically important as we made that transition to the three safety system, and building a little bit more depth back there and another number. So, and when you kind of add all those things up, it made sense for us. But it was also about who Tanner is as a person. He really, you don't just walk into this environment here and demand respect. You have to earn it, and he's done that. He did it in a short period of time. Really helped the guys learn the system. But you can see his ability. He made two huge plays in the game on Saturday night in the big spot. So his experience, preparation, and hard work's paying off.
Third row right, Rob Muller, Columbus Dispatch.
Ryan, your offensive coach. You even called Jim the head coach of the defense. But you still have to know something about defense, and you have to stick your nose in there. What's the percentage of time you spend in a week looking at defense? Are you in those meetings? Just don't want to give the impression that this is like total hands-on.
Yeah, well, you know, on Sunday, we come in, meet with the offense, go through the film, and then on Sunday, go do the same thing with the defense. And we talk about personnel. We talk about schematics. We talk about what's coming ahead, what we need to get done during the week. And as the week goes on, just have discussions about things that are going on in practice and, personnel on the other side, schematics. But I try – because I've been there before. I feel like, when I say something, as the head coach, people usually, overreact. That's just the way it is. Now, Jim has been great. He doesn't do that. Sometimes he allows me to say things and he takes it in and we have a discussion about it. And he's very, very intelligent that way. But at the end of the day, I want him to trust his instincts on things. But I try to be someone to just kind of throw ideas off, looking at it through the offensive side of things. And then obviously just the culture of the team is more where I'm involved with and with those guys and special teams. But the schematics and the day-to-day stuff, that's really all him.
How much do you get to know guys, players on defense? Do you wish you could get to know more? Is it?
Yeah, I think that's where the special teams comes in. And that's where, I try to do the best I can throughout the week when I'm not, on the field, with the offense or in meetings with the offense, try to get around those guys the best we can. And spend as much time as we can and take good care of them. And I think they all recognize that and understand that, in order for us, for this to work, the offense has to be right as well. And I think that they respect that and, it's worked.
Right behind him, Tony Gerben, Buckeye Huddle.
Ryan, I think it's sometimes kind of silly to critique or criticize CJ because he's basically being judged against perfection. But after the game, we talked about, he has to make sure he doesn't get bored or lose focus. I'm wondering, did you see any of that after watching film maybe?
I thought he played well. I thought he was efficient. I thought he made some really good throws. But like everybody, there's always things that you got to grow on. You got to get better at. He knows that. And that's unlike any game. He's I think people ask, what can he get better at? And everything. You know, I say that after this week. I said it at the beginning of the week. I said it last year. And if he was here for another 3 years, I'd say the same thing. I mean, every week you got to get better. He's not, like you said, he's not perfect. Nobody's perfect. So, and don't expect him to be. Don't want him to play that way. Certainly don't want the guys ever thinking they have to be perfect. I want them to play and trust their eyes and trust their instincts. So still a lot to learn from, a lot to grow from, but you can see his progress has been strong and as he's building and getting better.
And you've talked about not wanting to put too much on his plate. Do you consider putting more on his plate to make sure he stays engaged, or is this,
I think he's being critical of himself. You know, he's engaged. He's doing a great job. I mean, I think, you know, he has to answer some questions that are probably unfair to him. I mean, you know, throwing five touchdowns again and beating a team the way we did and playing the way we did. I mean, that's a heck of an outing. So, you know, he's probably just trying to explain a couple of bad passes, and that's okay. He's going to have a couple passes that he reads that he wants back. I had about 10 calls that I wish I had back. That's just the way football goes. So, you know, if you poll a lot of the guys in the NFL this past Sunday, I'm sure there was a lot of them that said the same thing. So that's playing football. And when you play against, you know, conference opponents like we do and teams like Wisconsin, there's going to be things that come up that maybe didn't the week before. And that's where you got to continue to grow. And that's what we're talking about going into these past couple of weeks, is identifying the issues and making sure that you address them and learn from them and grow.
Right next door, Cameron T. Robinson, The Athletic.
Ryan, you mentioned CJ and how much he just wants to get better all the time. From where you saw him against Notre Dame to now, where have you seen the most growth from him in the last couple weeks?
I just think he's gotten into a rhythm a little bit with the offense. And again, losing Jackson really got us out of rhythm in that game for sure. And the way the defense was playing, you know, we just decided to, you know, run the football because we felt like we were. And that was okay. That's how we went. We won the game. And I thought down the stretch in that game, he was excellent. I think he was about 9 of 10 and really good in the fourth quarter. But, you know, having Marvin and Emeka and now Julian, Xavier Johnson, you know, that's a whole different group than he had last year. You know, it was Chris, Garrett, and Jackson, and he didn't have any three of those guys out there. And Jeremy Rucker was the tight end. So I think what we've done is we've built the offense around those guys now, which is a little bit of a different feel. And I think CJ's embraced that, and he's gotten into some chemistry with those guys over time. And those guys have settled into some roles, which has been, you know, really the blessing, the silver lining behind not having Jackson here for some of these games.
Have you been, I don't want to say surprised, but maybe impressed with the way the receivers have played, knowing the injuries you guys have had over the last couple weeks?
No, it's about what we see in practice, about what we expected, but proud of the way they played. And I know they still, you know, feel like there's a lot of meat on the bone, but the chemistry is being built, and there's been some production, obviously, in that room and also in the tight end room.
Fourth row left, Andy Andrews, Buckeye Sports.
Yes, Ryan, I had a couple of questions relating to Cade Stover. Just kind of watching the game back, his run blocking kind of popped. When did you start seeing that from him and his development, and when did that kind of emerge as a big part of this game?
It's one of those things when you're developing as a tight end, it takes time, and sometimes you feel like you're working, and you're not making any progress, and then all of a sudden one day you wake up and you're like, here we are. And I think that's happened with Cade. It took some time to get there, you know, because you have to do so many different things. But he had a great offseason. His leadership was off the charts. And, I think along that journey, there was probably some doubt along the way. But he stuck with it. He was resilient. He persevered through that. And because of that, he's stronger for it today. And now you're seeing the best version of him.
Obviously, there was a lot of his blocking success came in line, maybe from kind of that split wing position. But also, I wanted to ask specifically, there was a play early in the game, I believe it was a bubble to Emeka, where he was split out in the slot and served as the lead blocker on that bubble screen. What about his skill set makes him a good blocker in space on those kinds of plays?
Well, I think when you look at Cade, when you look at Mitch, when you look at G, when you look at all of our receivers, they block on the perimeter, and that's a strength for us. And it has to be moving forward. I mean, they're all strong, rugged players. Yeah, anytime you can get guys out in space like that, and I know exactly which player you're talking about. I mean, Cade did an excellent job on that safety or nickel, whoever that was. I mean, he was strong, his hands were inside, he used good technique, and that created a play of probably about 8 to 10 yards for us. And we look at that as the run game, and that's just an extension of the run game, and it's forcing defenses to cover us sideline to sideline. And then once you start to spread them out, then you want to start running at them inside, and that's the idea. but you have to have guys who are willing to block on a perimeter, and Cade's one of them. But I would say that all of our receivers are doing a good job out there on that.
Fourth row left, Jacob Bench, the Lantern.
Yeah, and Ryan, I wanted to ask a couple of broader questions. You know, this Saturday they're recognizing the 100-year celebration of Ohio Stadium, and wanted to get some of your memories just on, you know, the shoe, since you've been a coach at Ohio State. Just what sort of memories come to mind when you think about Ohio Stadium and the shoe and Coach Dye?
In a short period of time, have some great memories. I think the Penn State game in 18 was one of my greatest memories, being down 3 scores going into the fourth quarter. That blackout was unbelievable. Running out of the stadium the first time in that Oregon State game was kind of a surreal experience. The wins against the team up north were huge. Just great memories of being in the stadium, hearing Hang On Sloopy at the end of the third quarter. Just the band, even pregame, just the excitement of being in that stadium. But I'd say probably my two favorite things is listening to the crowd after a touchdown, or listening to the crowd after a third down sack or stop, are my two favorite things, because that's when I think the stadium's at its loudest. And, when you look back on those times, it makes you smile.
From a Big Ten perspective, with conference play getting fully underway, teams, play tough against each other, losses here and there for other teams and things like that. I think there are 4 undefeated teams left in the Big Ten. Do you ever have concerns that, at the end of the season, there might be CFP implications from teams playing tough against each other in the Big Ten, or for your team or otherwise?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's always a concern. Yeah. I mean, anytime you play one more game, that's, 7 more losses in the conference. But it is what it is, and that's what makes this the best conference in the country. And you have to bring it every week, and that's why we talk about competitive stamina. We're not allowed to have a bad day. And again, this is a message that's been going on for a long time, and here we are right in the – now we're kind of getting into the conference play, and we got to do it again this week.
Deep left, Brendan Gulick, Buckeyes Now on Sports Illustrated.
Hey, Coach, your thoughts on a secondary that was obviously a bit shorthanded this weekend after watching the tape? How do you feel?
I'll give a lot of credit to Tim Walton and Jim for getting those guys ready, and then for Jair and JK to step up the way they did. Very proud of them. But I think it goes to show you these guys both practiced all spring, all preseason. I don't think they missed a practice between the two of them. And when you're going every day and you're practicing, the only way to get better is to practice. And they did. And so when we went to put them in the game, the whole team believed in them because they saw it in practice. We knew it wasn't going to be perfect, but they played very well. And they're both very talented. You could see it out there when they stepped into it. And so now they got that first start under their belt in the huge environment. So now hopefully they can, find the speed of the game. And I think about, the first start for a lot of guys, it's hectic. It's a lot of emotion. It's crazy. It's exhausting. But now they can move on, get that past them, and focus on getting better.
I want to ask you a question about play calling. One, your sort of how you have evolved as a play caller, your influences. There were a lot of people who are very complimentary of the way that you called this game. So I'm just curious how you evaluate at the end of the day. What did I do well? What do I want to do better next time? How do you keep working?
Yeah, I always say they're good calls if they work, right? I mean, I'm dead serious. I mean, it's a good call to go for on fourth down if you convert. It's a great call if it works. And so it's the players and the coaches who, put the plan in, teach it, walk through. I mean, just to get one play ready, we missed a play. That we had an opportunity. It drew up exactly the way we wanted to. The protection broke down and we didn't hit it. And it was like a knife right into your chest. I mean, hours and hours and hours of time for that one play. And we didn't quite get it. But there was a lot in that game that we did get. And there's a lot of work that gets put into one single play. And I think our guys are taking some pride in their execution. But at the end of the day, it's about players, not plays. I think as coaches, we can start talking about, play calling and this and that. I mean, at the end of the day, get the ball to your best players. And if those plays are working, guess what? They're going to get called again. If it doesn't work, it's probably not going to get called again. And it's as simple as that. And you trust the guys around you. But that's why we talk all the time about how important Tuesday and Wednesday is. No, you got to put the work in so that you've prepped and you've worked against all the different looks so you can execute on Saturday.
Second row left, Steve Helway, 24/7
Sports. The same vein. I think when you were up 28-0, you'd run 23 plays, and 13 of them had gone for 10 yards or more. What was so special, what was so great about those first four series that just 10, 12, 14-yard chunks? And I looked up, you didn't have a third down. The third down conversions were non-existent.
Yeah. Well, we got into a good rhythm early on. We hit a couple of those passes, and that was big. And then, you know, we were getting some good movement in the run game. I thought we were targeted pretty well early on. And, you know, CJ was making some really good throws. I thought the protection early on was strong. And guys made plays. And so, when you have that balance of run and pass, then you can be more and more explosive because they can't gang up in one area. And I think that you're seeing certainly our weapons on the outside, but now you're seeing our weapon with Cade, the running game. So we're going to keep trying to build in those areas so that, they can't hopefully take away one thing against us, then maybe it opens up something else. But it all comes down to execution. And, you know, it could be a great play. It can be all designed well, but if we're not executing it at a high level and it doesn't work. And I think to answer your question, it's about the execution, and it was good on that first half for sure.
Right next door, Stephen Means, Cleveland.com.
A lot of time has been spent over the last couple of years talking about Julian's health for obvious reasons, but now that he's back, like, what did you guys like about him as a wide receiver coming out of high school? How much of that have you seen coming?
Yeah, first off, his physicality, his work ethic, his ability to get the ball. I think you can see what you didn't really notice probably, or maybe you have to go back and watch, is just how physically he is in a run game. So that's a huge advantage for us in the run game that probably not a lot of people are talking about, cracking safeties and going down and being physical, where, you know, in the run game, typically there's somebody extra coming down in the box. We know that. We've talked about this for years. Well, if you have a wide receiver like Julian, like Emeka, like Mar, like X, like some of these guys who are going in and making blocks on those safeties, well, now we can get the ball to the corner, and that makes a big difference. So that part's big. But then even in the pass game, you can see how physical he was on a couple of those runs after he caught the ball, in particular the touchdown. You know, just strong and powerful. And you have to understand what kind of a receiver you are. And because of his strength, you know, he's a mismatch for a lot of DBs.
Is that given where he came from school, where it was basically like blocking and run straight a lot of the times?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seemed like he had a different type of development, maybe Jackson and some of the other guys in his class. Have you seen that development kind of take place, and where has he maybe come?
I hear what you're saying, and you know, everybody has their own journey, and everyone has a different background of where they come from, and he's on his own journey, and I think he's made a lot of progress, in his few years here, and I think now he's playing his best football, and he has come a long way in his development.
Right behind him, Dan Hope, left corner.
Ryan, with Jackson, it's not playing against Toledo or playing against Toledo, not playing against Wisconsin. When you're making that decision, how much of that's you? How much of that's Jackson? How much of that's the medical staff?
Yeah, it's the medical staff and Jackson. We always refer to the trainers and to the doctors, and then get the feedback from the player, and we try to do the best we can to, keep them as safe as we can in those moments, and we'll continue to do that.
When you look back now, is there regret playing him against Toledo?
No. I mean, you got to just, trust in what you see in your evaluations, and then go from there.
What do you feel like is kind of a timetable for him now? Do you have to be even more cautious after he did have a setback?
I just think that it's a long season, and like you're mentioning, I don't think we want to move forward until – we all feel really good about everything. But again, Jackson's, still has a mindset of day to day, and, we're not going to put any kind of timetable on it, and just, he and the training staff are going to work hard. I know he's frustrated, but, we're not as far away as we think. And if he just has the mindset of showing up every day and getting as much treatment as he can and taking care of his body, this will be behind us soon. And we still got a lot of football to play.
Front row, middle, Joey Kaufman, Columbus Dispatch.
Ryan, I wanted to ask about your success in the red zone this year. You're finishing drives this year more often with touchdowns than last year. What do you think's the reason behind that?
I think we've run the ball well down there. We've been efficient. But then, I think CJ's throwing and catching, and the receivers have been pretty good. I mean, you think about the Toledo game and some of those catches that Marvin made and tiptoeing on the sideline in the back of the end zone, the one that Julian caught in the the end zone, and then even the one that he threw to a Mecca there. I mean, that was those were tight windows, but that's playing quarterback at a high level in a red zone. You know, nobody's open. You know, maybe Cade was on that one, but that's rare. I think that the protection's been good. I think the quarterback play has been excellent, and we're running the ball.
How much of a challenge was that for young quarterback last year? Just when the red zone, everything gets smaller, tighter, having to deal with that.
Oh, yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, third down red zone for a quarterback, that's where you make your money. And we've worked hard on that. We spent a lot of time on that during the preseason. So we're going to have to continue to do that. You know, it only takes one bad day and you're out of whack. So we're going to stay hungry and make sure we're doing a great job down there.
Condition of CJ, did some of the other stuff too, like the eye formation stuff, just some of that stuff help?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. We're trying to be diverse and do different things so that, you know, teams can't gang up on what we're up to. I think at the end of the day, it's execution, but hopefully some of the different looks are giving us a little advantage.
Awesome work. Rivals, 97.1 The Fan.
And you said after week one, you didn't really buy into the coaching cliche of the jump from week one to week two. Are there other coaching mantras that are commonly accepted wisdom that you think are nonsense?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes coaches talk too much.
Is there anything that you can think of that you think a lot of your peers believe that you don't think is true about college football?
Nothing strikes me offhand. I'd probably have to think about it. I don't know. I just know that, at the end of the day, you know, we all do a lot of talking, and it's about hard work. It's about the players. And coaching is still about teaching. It's about counseling. It's about, you know, relationships with players. And we all want to win, but we got into coaching for the right reasons, and that's to have an impact on young men. And we can't lose touch with that, with everything that goes on today in college football, for sure.
Teaching and counseling, and Dan asked about Jackson. This month hasn't gone the way he envisioned, and he's not through the process yet. What is it like for you and Coach Hart, I guess, to manage that, help him get through? How's he been handling that part of it?
Yeah, he's been okay. I mean, he hasn't been great. You know, I mean, he's struggling. He wants to play. He's one of the more competitive players I've been around before. But it rarely does it go the way you expect it to go. Life, that's just life in general. So life's going to throw adversity our way, and we control the response. You know, there's just so many things in our life that we're not going to be able to understand. And so these are great opportunities for us to help them deal with that down the road. And we talk to our team a lot about that, just about the different things. And, you know, how many guys in that locker room, you know, their career or the season or last game has played out exactly the way that they want it. So we try not to talk to them too much about focusing on expectations and just focusing on the moment the best they can. And not easy for him, I'm sure. But if he can keep doing that, then this will be behind him soon, and he'll be stronger for it.
Adam King, WBNS 10TV.
Coach, you talk about competitive stamina all the time. I'm curious if at this point it gets harder to focus on competitive stamina when you're beating Wisconsin 52 and putting up in 77 against Toledo. How hard is it to actually implement that right now?
Well, it's been implemented. Now it's just a matter of do we do it. But we have to be all over the human element. The human element is to, not be disciplined and do the same things that you've done the week before. But that's exactly what we talked about on Sunday. And that's what we're going to talk about today going into this week. Every time you go into a game, you have to get physically, mentally, and emotionally prepared to play in that game. And it usually takes, 24 to 48 hours to come down off of that. It's just, that's how competitive it is to play in an environment like that, in a game like that, a conference game. So we got to do that again for 3:30 on Saturday against Rutgers. And that's the discipline of trying to become great and try to reach the goals that we're going to strive for. So, new challenge this week, but again, we've talked about this. We've prepared for this. It's been implemented. Now it's just a matter of executing it.
When you see how the offense has shown out in the last two games compared to the first two games, you used the word clunky early on this season. How different are those meetings now? Do you change any of your coaching style now that things are working on the field?
No. Did you try to be consistent? Was consistent after the Notre Dame game. You know, didn't knew that we had a curveball thrown our way without Jackson. You know, there was certainly a lot game planned to target number 11 in that game. And then when he was out, it was like, oh boy, where are we? where am I going now? But we solved the problems and got it done. And those are the contingency plans and the paranoia that coaches go into games with. You know, that's why when you see us walking back and forth like crazy people before the game, it's usually because, okay, what happens if this happens? You know? And I got to tell you, like, I didn't have a long list. What if Jackson goes out and, you know, early in the game? So I got caught a little bit there, but the guys figured it out. We figured it out. Some guys stepped up and then from there we've built, you know, and I think that's been good to see some guys step up, you know, to see the receivers, see the offensive line, the running backs, tight ends, and then to see the defense build and grow. I think there's a confidence level there too, across the team, that when our defense goes out there, they're going to get stopped. And that goes a long way across the board.
Do you find yourself rolling out a new wrinkle every week just to give people something to think about?
Yeah, we try to. I think that's the balance, is you try to be creative. You want to, you know, keep things fresh, give the defense new looks, and give the offense new looks, but also do the things that you know well. And we've gone, you know, to both ends of those spectrums before. You know, too vanilla, they can tee off on you, or too much, and you have a struggle. You struggle to execute. So where is that balance? And that's where the work gets done during the week.
What's Greg Schiano's best trait as a coach?
He's a lot of great traits. He's an excellent motivator. You know, creates great relationships with his players. Motivates. He's very intelligent. Really can drive. You know, the whole program at a high level. He sees it. Understands what needs to get done. I think he's an excellent leader and very smart coach.
Tom Berry, WBNS 10TV.
Coach, you worked very hard in the offseason on toughness, and that was one of the goals. How was the toughness Saturday night against Wisconsin?
I thought it was good. I thought you could see a lot of guys playing with an edge, and that's what our expectation is. And so now we got to continue to do it and find out again if this is just something we've done in a couple games or if this is our identity moving forward. But I think we've shown that we can do it.
Look at Rutgers. You know Schiano. What do you expect Saturday out of them?
Yeah, a dogfight. You know, they're 3-1. They've played good football this year. They have good players. You know, Greg's into, I guess it's his third year now. And, you know, so now he's starting to get his guys in there. And, you know, every year they get stronger. So, you know, like I said, nothing changes in terms of our preparation. We got to do a great job. And they're better than they've been in the past.
Second row middle, Nathan Barrett, Cleveland.com.
Between Denzel, Cam, and Hancock, any of those three that you expect to be able to play on Saturday, just what is the evaluation process?
Yeah, we're hoping to, you know, have at least Cam and Denzel back. I don't think we'll see Jordan here, you know, for at least another week or so. But we'll see. We'll kind of evaluate it and, you know, get a better feel for it later in the week.
When you knew coming into this year that you had both a thin situation there a little bit, scholarship-wise, but also a very young room, any of that play into why you wanted Tim Walton to be the guy to lead that group, or are there attributes that he has that you thought are just a good fit for a room that is that young, or you need to bring up the young guys?
Well, both. I think that Tim builds great relationships and has really done a great job of mentoring that room. But it was also the fact that Tim has a great you know, resume. He was a player here. He relates well with the players. He's really intelligent, knows technique. I mean, he kind of checked all of those boxes that we were looking for, and he's a great person. And we're glad he's with us, and he's a Buckeye.
Is that something you already knew him and those things about him, or was that something that was a process where you were getting that feedback from?
I had met him before, and then just, you know, you have so many people in such a small world and in the coaching industry. And, you know, when you talk to so many people after a while, and it's just all positive feedback, then, you know, people will tell you, you know, and all it takes is a couple bad recommendations for you to walk away from somebody. But everything just came back glowing about Tim. And so you knew he was special.
Front row middle, Bill Rabinowitz, Columbus Dispatch.
Yeah. Let me guess, the pass, the one that put the knife through your heart, was the pass down the seam to Aneka that couldn't step through?
Yeah.
Jair played, I mean, true freshman.
Yep.
Obviously, Denzel did that last year. JK's been in your year, probably a little easier. What did you see in Jair that made you think he's ready?
Well, I think it was just the practice. He's out there every day. You know, just doesn't miss a rep. It wasn't all perfect, but he's out there competing every day in practice. And when you're going against Marvin and Jackson and Julian and those guys and Mecca, you know, that's really good work. And every day he was getting a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And you could see his confidence. He was confident going into the game. And, you know, I think, again, you know, Tim really did a great job getting him ready.
And Lathan Ransom did not play. If I'm right. He was not only unavailable. What happened with him, and do you expect him back?
Yeah, we do. We expect him back. I think going into this week, you know, we usually meet on the availability report like around Thursday. We're going to meet a little bit closer to game time, so it's a little bit more accurate.
Over to second row right, Bill Landis, The Athletic.
Ryan, you spoke before about how G can be hard to figure for defenses how they want to defend him. And I'm wondering, the point we were saying about Julian, if you see any similar effect because he's a bigger guy, he's so physical, and you can line him up sort of tighter to the formation sometimes, do you ever feel like it's some form of playing with an extra tight end out there?
With a Mecca?
No, with Julian.
Oh, with Julian, yeah. I mean, I feel like that with both of those guys. Yeah, I mean, you know, anytime you can get a mismatch, however you get it, and their physicality is really showing out. And so because of that, you know, you're seeing guys get open. You're seeing some separation. And some of that is because they're just winning with their speed and athleticism, which they really have on the outside. But sometimes in the play action stuff, you're seeing it because of the conflict they're creating.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of times today the how the offensive line was targeted better in the run game. And, you know, we talked about that through the offseason. I think we wondered, well, what will you change schematically? Will you be more physical? How much of it was just your tracks being better and being able to identify those kind of things better?
I mean, I think it's all the above, but I think it's also the accountability of the guys up front. And but it's also the running backs, it's the tight ends, it's everybody involved. And but I do think right now that you know, they're coming off the ball better and they're targeting than they were, you know, at the beginning of the season. Each week they get a little bit better. So we'll keep growing.
And you've been able to get Kyle McCord into the game a couple of times, but he's only thrown a handful of passes. Yeah. Like, what's your balance between wanting to get him work, give him the full playbook, and just sort of run the clock out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the balance. You try to you want to get him those reps, but also, you know, when the game gets a certain way, you know, you don't want to upstage somebody. You know, I just try to be sensitive to that in those moments. But at the same time, you like to get him reps. And so we've tried to create a few like short passes for him. And even like the bootleg pass that was kind of supposed to be in the flat and kind of in the Toledo game, he snuck out the back end and Kyle's just playing. And it was a good read and a good throw and it worked out. But, you know, late in the game like that, you know, we try to respect what's going on and respect the game.
Since Kyle gets frustrated when he's out there just kind of catching it and handing it off.
Probably. Yeah, he's competitive. He wants to do it, and he'll have his opportunity.
Time for a couple more. Spencer Holbrook, Letterman Road.
Ran a lot of attention to Peyton Mike Hall, 3 or 4 games on the defensive line, but Teron Vincent's a guy who kind of pops when you watch him on the film. Did you see that this offseason? And is it just a matter of him being healthy? Is it being a year older? Like, what is it about Teron that's making him play so well right now?
Yeah, I thought he played really well in this game. He ate up a lot of double teams. He was efficient, graded out a champion. And so, you know, that's a big step for him because we need him to be strong inside. And with he and Mike in there together, they're powerful. And, you know, if we want to get to where we need to be, the D-line's got to be the strength of our defense. I think it has been so far. But Teron probably played one of his better games on Saturday.
You watch every team back. How many times do you need to? Are you even surprised sometimes when you see Tommy making the plays that he's making? Seems like he's just on a different level.
Well, he's seeing it. He's playing fast. Like you said, he's downhill. He's diagnosing plays, and he's the leader of our defense.
And final questions, front row right, Tim May on 3, Letterman Row.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. Back to Julian Fleming. What was that moment in preseason? I know you talked about that scrimmage where he put his shoulder back in or whatever. Yep. And went back in there and caught 2 touchdowns. But in the game settings, et cetera, when did he definitely in your brain just click off accountable, this guy – you can throw the ball to this guy. You understand what I'm saying? Because I would think there's some reluctance till a guy proves it. But
yeah,
and go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just think we practice so much, and football is such a unique game that way. Every other game, every other sport, you're always playing the game. Here, you practice, and you just see things in practice, and you just see trends, and it's just a matter of time before we say sink to the level of your training in practice. But if you're doing it in practice every day against the some of the talent we have on our team, then it's going to show up in the game. And so we believed in him, and we continue to believe in him, and now you're seeing what we see in practice.
And just a quickie follow on that. What's your highlight of him? Is it that catch he made on the sideline there against Toledo
I like the one he caught where he ran a couple guys over to finish it off. I mean, just the toughness and the physicality. You know, he had a really good offseason with Mick in the weight room, and you could see it pay off right there.
That was going to be my choice number two.
I could beat you to it.
Yeah, exactly. And last thing, Mitch Rossi, what does it just do, you know, for you guys schematically when you do give him that little inside handoff, when you do give him that dive, whatever? I mean, that's something y'all have rarely ever done, you know. And what does it do for you knowing you've got that now and you have that threat to show the defense? You understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. We kind of recognized it towards the end of last year, but hadn't really put a lot into it. And then as we went into the Utah game and the Rose Bowl, you could see we started to use Mitch a little bit, and then had a long conversation with him in the offseason about this very thing that you're talking about. And we see some things in Mitch that really can help us. And you're starting to see it, you know. You're starting to see what he can do, and it's a weapon for us. And as we go, especially situationally, it's going to be very, very important for us. And the touchdown that we had, the handoff that he had, like those are third down conversions. Those are big plays for us to keep drives going. So he's worked really hard, and he has some versatility. So he's a weapon for us.
Smart of that question, but why are y'all reluctant to call somebody a fullback? I mean.
I mean, you can call him whatever you want. I don't care.
You guys don't listen to him. I mean, you know
what I'm saying? Yeah. I don't know. I guess because it's been a while since we've had one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thanks.